Blog Talk Radio. Hi there. It is Wednesday night and it's Social Geek Radio time. It's lovely here in Houston. What's the weather like for you, AK?
It's clear and crisp and cool, and I'm in love with it.
Yes, I know. You're going to be getting those Uggs out here soon and jackets, and I may find a sweater at some point, but not right now. So it looks like our chat room is filling up. Things that the technology is coming good. Everything's going to be working out just fine. What do you have coming up this week soon?
Yeah, Friday I'll be at the Fit Blogging Conference downtown. All the fitness bloggers of the world flocking to, I believe it's the convention center in downtown Baltimore. So I'll be hanging out there on behalf of a client, because I'm not a fitness blogger by trade, but I am a blogger and I do love fitness, so I figure I'll learn something. And so I'm doing that, and then I was just asked to speak at the Mid-Atlantic Marketing Summit in Baltimore on October 18th, so I'm very, very excited about that.
I saw that. That lineup looks fabulous.
Yeah.
That should be a lot of fun.
Need to fill some spots with riffraff, so I got a call.
Very good. And then after you do that speaking, you're going to meet me in New York City on Saturday, October, what is that, the 20th. I'm really loving this Charity Miles app and for everything that it stands for. I got a four-mile bike ride in just before we went live tonight. So I've got yes, and I saw a hawk. Great. So I have to use Instagram and put the picture up. But so Jean from Charity Miles will be with us next week to talk more about the app and how it was founded. And then we can share a little bit more about what we're going to be doing come October when a bunch of us will meet in New York to walk for charity.
Yeah, I'm very excited. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be excellent. So tell us about our guest tonight. Why don't you go ahead and introduce Matt
for us? All right. Well, our guest tonight is Matt Goddard, who is the CEO of a company that's actually, I believe, headquartered. Matt, can correct me if I'm wrong, right down the street from me here in Baltimore. So I've been spoke at a little marketing meeting at their new offices, which are gorgeous, about 2 weeks ago. And I've been collaborating on some things with a couple gals that work for Matt. So that's how I introduced them to the show, and that's how we have Matt. So welcome, Matt, and thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it. Good to be here.
Well, it's very exciting. So we'll just have you start off telling us a little bit about what you do and what R2 Integrated does.
Yeah, sure. I've been a serial entrepreneur, you know, since about 1996. I've been doing internet marketing, digital marketing, web development for quite a while. And in 2005, my old business partner got together with me and we said, you know, what's the next big thing? What's going to happen in digital and where do we want to be? And we decided to build R2i, and we kind of built it as an agency in reverse. We don't present clients with big ideas. We don't present them with a great creative, at least not at the beginning. We don't present them with campaigns. What we do is we start with scorecards. We start with analytics. We start with the key performance indicators that are going to, you know, make or break their efforts. And then we figure out how we're going to do it. And then we create the big ideas as the last part of the process. So most people see us as the geeks that do marketing, but we're sort of a digital agency in reverse. And as analytics has become more and more important over the last few years, our relevancy has really grown nationally. And as you mentioned, we're headquartered in Baltimore, Washington, and we have another full-service office in Seattle, and just really enjoying this time around.
That's very, very exciting. I love that in reverse aspect. I think that's really cool and something that's kind of probably a rare take on things as far as individual agencies are concerned.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most of our competitors are starting to understand what we do, and the creative is very important and the big ideas are very important, but we think if you lead with that, you're sort of missing the overarching power of the web. I mean, the web, you know, by its nature is a buying engine. It's a decision-making engine. It's something that where customers drive the process, and as they're driving, you know, they leave their breadcrumbs and they leave certain opportunities to obtain information and metrics about what they're doing. So we feel that if leads are number one, if customer acquisition is number one, if engagement is number one, if something as simple as just extra Facebook likes is number one, there's a metric that we can assign to that, and that's where we start the process.
Very good. So along those lines, do you think that the web's evolution and, let's say, the disruptive power of social media interactions have changed the way that consumers make decisions nowadays?
Absolutely, absolutely. As we mentioned, the web, you know, when Google first, you know, well, actually not first, but when they came out second or third with their search model and their advertising model, they basically drew a line in the sand and they said the web's a buying engine. And it was the first advertising medium ever where the customer told the system what it wanted, and then the system presented an ad. In the past, you would send ads over broadcast media, and you weren't really sure what was going on. So, you know, the web as a buying engine really started with search. And then when social popped up, you saw this evolution of peer-to-peer networks and different people talking about different products and services or which restaurant to go to, or should I go to Aruba or Jamaica, or is this software application going to solve my needs? And this vast amount of peer-to-peer communication actually started figuring into the buying engine, and it started to influence the buying engine. And we're at a point right now where it's influencing it more and more each day. So as social grows, and as social as an execution, as a discipline, as a behavior, because we're all social creatures, as we continue to use the platforms that are available to us, you know, everyone's going to recognize that there isn't anything I can't find out. There isn't anything about a product I can't learn about. There's nothing out there that an expert or, you know, a professor or, you know, a thought leader can't tell me. And I now have access to all of these people through all these different mediums. So in the future, decision-making behavior and the way that we make decisions is going to be rooted in the social web. And these peer-to-peer interactions are going to dominate that process.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome point. I mean, I'm totally that person. Like, I literally am at a point now where I can't buy anything without researching it or asking for somebody's advice first, because I know that there is some information about whatever it is that I'm buying somewhere on the web. And, you know, God forbid I go out and I buy something without knowing everything possibly about it first.
Yeah, and I actually broke my own rule a few years ago. I was helping a friend move, and I decided to, you know, hire a moving company on their behalf. And I went on the web and I searched, and I didn't really do any research in the social web about whether this moving company was reputable or not, and it turns out they weren't. They totally ripped me off, and later I went back to the web and I found out through all of these different people that had used them how bad they were. So I actually didn't follow my own advice about 2 years ago, and from now on I always will, because, you know, there's just so much out there for people to grab hold of. You know, I wrote a blog post maybe a year and a half ago, and it was stated, you know, how are marketers going to reach customers in the future? How do you market to the Borg? You know, how do you market to a vast network of people that know everything about everything? And, you know, how do you do that? What do you tell them? You know, can you broadcast your message? Can you differentiate yourself? Can you talk about your features and benefits? And will any of that really resonate with them when they can go to their peers, they can go to experts, thought leaders, everyone under the sun, and learn more about your product than even you may know about it, or right. even more than your sales professionals may know about it. And that's where the world is going, this complete era of transparency. And I think what will end up happening is, you know, companies that make the best products will end up winning, and companies that do not make the best products will end up losing, and the marketers will be sort of trying to figure out, you know, can we even do anything anymore? Can we even influence anymore through traditional marketing means?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think my next question sort of piggybacks on that, and that I've heard you mention before the term social PPC, and when I first heard you mention it, I was thinking, okay, pay-per-click. But I know it's not pay-per-click, so can you explain the social PPC a little bit more, and do you think that brands can really manage the conversation layer that you've talked about?
Yeah, so, you know, I know social PPC, when we first came up with the concept, we were like, it sounds like pay-per-click, but we decided, hey, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe, you know, we can create a reference point. But social PPC, you know, the PPC stands for the places on the web that matter most, the people on the web that matter most, and the content on the web that matters most. So every brand has an ecosystem of buyers, and those buyers go to places on the web to find out information about that brand or other brands. They go to people on the web to get advice and understand the differences between the products and which one they should potentially purchase. And then they're always digesting content. So we look at the web now as places, people, and content, or people, places, and content. And what's changed on the web in the last couple of years is all of those things are now networked. So it used to be that you'd have a website and you would broadcast information. You didn't have the two-way conversations happening. You didn't have the network effect. But now on the web, everything is networked. There are places on the web that have links to other places, which then have links to content, which has then been written by a blogger who then is part of this place. So everything is becoming more and more networked. And when we think of the concept of social PPC, we say, how does this network operate? How does it work? How do people use this network to make buying decisions? How do they use it to make life decisions? And we feel very strongly that if brands could figure this out, if they could monitor, manage, you know, amplify, activate, engage with the people, places, and content network of the web and do it effectively, they would have a much better understanding of what their customers' needs are. They'd have a much better understanding of what products to develop and how to develop them. They'd be able to handle issues that customers have. They'd be able to protect their reputation when people are talking about them in negative ways. But you really have to understand the PPC, the social PPC, in order to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I talk to people and business owners, and perhaps it's my fault because I start off the initial conversation incorrectly, and I say, you know, are you doing social media for your business? And I think that word doing is such an awful word to say. You know, people are like, oh, yeah, I do social media, and then it's the word do. And it's like that's such a little teeny tiny word for what it really needs to stand for in terms of actually being effective in the social space. I think that's really important for, you know, our listeners and all brands out there to really think about what does doing social media mean, and are you doing all of the doing? I keep saying it again, but
yeah, no. Well, you gotta use something. You gotta come up with something.
Yeah, I have to put there. But
yeah, I mean, you gotta come up with something. I mean, you mentioned the conversation layer. I mean, we see the conversation layer as this vast network of people, places, and content where advice is being given, where advice is being sought after, where different opinions are being articulated. And what I think, you know, a lot of brands are recognizing is that most of these conversations, most of the discussions that take place on the social web or on the web in general that affect purchasing behavior and affect life decision-making behavior don't happen on their own social properties.
Right.
So I can have my own Facebook page, and I can have my own Twitter account and a YouTube channel, and I can have a Pinterest, and I can maybe have a Google+, At R2I, we see those as extensions of your own corporate website. Now, they have different attributes. You can like on Facebook. You can, you know, amplify conversations on Twitter, assuming anyone even saw your tweet with, you know, how crazy that system is. You can create great stories on Pinterest with the pictures. And, you know, on Google Plus, you can do social search. But the question that we are talking to brands about is that where all the decision-making behavior is happening? Is that where the acquisition behavior is taking place? We actually believe that now and even more and more in the future, every year that goes by, all of the acquisition and decision-making behavior will happen on unowned properties, properties that the brand does not control, properties that the, that are independent of the brand. And we see the owned properties becoming more of a customer relationship management vehicle, because if I like Krispy Kreme on Facebook, I'm probably already a customer of Krispy Kreme. If I like Coke on Facebook, I'm probably already a customer of Coke. So the question is, will I ever get or gain market share by having lots of followers? I probably won't. Will I obtain loyalty? Yes. Will I be able to service those customers better? Yes. Will I be able to communicate new offers, new promotions, new products and services on my Facebook page? Yes. But I'm not going to acquire any new customers on my Facebook page. The acquisition process happens off property.
And that's a really, really great point, because I think a lot of people say, oh, okay, well, I'll set up a Facebook page and I'll set up a Twitter account, I'll set up my Google Plus and my YouTube channel, and then everybody's just going to magically find me and be my new customers. And that is so not the case. And I think it's so important to emphasize to people that there's actually a lot of extra work that goes into, you know, going out there and finding those people and finding out where the conversations are happening and then introducing them to your products and your services that way versus just sort of waiting for them to all magically come to you.
No, I hear you loud and clear. In fact, you know, most of the, you know, the better social campaigns or campaigns that, you know, had social ROI attached to them were part of integrated campaigns. So it may have been a TV spot that drove people to a Facebook page, which included a survey, which included, you know, the ability to do A, B, and C. So they're very integrated. We actually, you know, at R2I, we don't see social as a marketing channel. In fact, Charlene Lee, this was a number of years ago. She's always been a way ahead of her time. She said having a Twitter strategy is like having a strategy for your phone system. And this is the first person to really draw a line in the sand and say Twitter is just a broadcast vehicle. It's got additional benefits to it, and I'm not saying don't set up Twitter. Twitter is very powerful. But, you know, the question becomes, what can these properties really do on the acquisition side of the business? And, you know, it's, we think that in that eventually it's all going to be CRM-based. It's all going to be managing the existing relationships on your own properties, and then, you know, going out to unowned properties and pushing the message to try to acquire customers. And when you're running, you know, they talk about crawl, walk, run. I did a bunch of surveys around the country with a number of brands, and, you know, it was like, where are we? Are we crawling, we walking, we running? We think when you're running, you'll actually integrate the content on your own properties and the content that you're trying to get out on your unowned properties. And, in fact, it may be the same piece of content. It'll just be integrated across those two areas. And you're definitely running at that point, but we see that as the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think this is probably going to lead into what I've heard you talk about the social media pyramid flipping, and that we're beginning to see that now. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you go back to the broadcast approach to doing things, which is, you know, create a commercial and blast it out on television, create a radio spot and put it out on the radio, you know, these were what we call one-to-many, you know, marketing approaches. You know, you may design it once, create it once, build it once, and then you would distribute it out to lots and lots of different people. Well, what's happening now is those lots and lots of different people are actually publishing their own content. They're talking about products and services on blog posts, on their own Twitter accounts, on their own Facebook accounts. And the brands now are starting to listen to this information I'm starting to digest it. So rather than it coming from a brand one to many, it's actually coming many to one in a reverse environment. And we see this, you know, every hour of the day. I mean, every listening tool that's out there, whether it be Radian or Sysomos or Visible, you know, they're really designed to help brands sort of at least at a minimum try to understand what's happening in this reverse pyramid. And it's just getting more and more like that. And now, you know, if you break it up by industry, if you break it up by product category, there's all of these little mini pyramids that are out there. If you're in travel, you know, there's these little mini pyramids around travel where all the people are doing the talking and the brands are listening. There's mini pyramids around whether I should go to Aruba. There's just all sorts of small little ecosystems that now exist, but they're not broadcast one to many. They're actually going in reverse.
So that puts the people sort of in control at the top of the pyramid, right?
It definitely does. It definitely does. Now, don't get me wrong. I still watch commercials. I still believe that there's a place for broadcast. I still believe there's a place for a wide variety of different advertising vehicles. And, you know, maybe that's half the web now. You know, it used to represent 100% of most of the marketing and advertising. Yes, there was the word of mouth, and there were, you know, event-related activities or, you know, guerrilla marketing activities. But for the most part, you know, brands spent a large majority of their budget, you know, in TV and radio and print. Mm-hmm. And that is starting to now change. So you have this new part of the web where the pyramid is switching and brands are starting to recognize its value. Now, you know, the elephant in the room is where's the money going to come from? If I'm a large brand and I spent, you know, $20 million or $50 million on television last year, and now all of a sudden I've got to become a publisher of content, I've got to manage my own properties, I've got to manage unowned properties, I have to listen, I've got to feed this information to product development, to customer service, the power is in the people's hands. You know, there's a lot of pain that people are feeling making the transition to be able to do those activities the right way and find the money for them, and even right. find the money for them. It's happening. It's definitely happening. But, you know, it's a process.
Right, absolutely. I think that's really important for people to think about as well, especially because so many of the traditional methods of pushing messages out are so easily ignored now. You know, people can, you know, DVR, Fubo,
yeah.
everything, and, you know, have satellite radio, and it's just so much easier to sort of miss the message coming out to the masses.
I hear you. I mean, have you heard the, you know, the advertisements for the Hopper? You know, this DVR system that I think it's Dish Network has now.
Yeah.
And they're basically broadcasting to the world that if you sign up for Dish Network, you never have to watch commercials anymore.
Oh.
You know, we have this amazing system, and you can, you know, tape, or I said tape. That's funny. You can record a lot. You can tell I'm a Gen Xer. I'm a Gen Xer. You can tell, but, you know, you can record all these different programs, and they're basically blasting this out. And I find that interesting because the content creators, you know, that they have all these great contracts with, they really rely on, you know, the advertising, you know, to support what they're doing and to support how they operate. So you see this really interesting collision occurring between a large, you know, distributor of content talking about the ability to bypass the commercials, and the content providers saying, well, you know, how's that going to work for us? And you mentioned, you know, satellite, you meant, you know, HBO. These are all subscription services. You know, they don't have any ads versus the old line television networks, which ran advertising. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, who wins that battle. And it also, I believe it's very generational. You know, I mean, the Gen Y and the younger folks, you know, they don't know how to watch commercials. And the Gen Xers, you know, all tolerate them, and, you know, baby boomers probably don't care as much. It's very generational.
I can totally attest to that. I'm the one who either, I never get to see TV during the day, so everything I watch is on DVR, so I fast forward through the commercials, or if I'm watching something live, as soon as the commercial comes on, that's when I pull up my phone and I go and I tweet something. So mm-hmm. I'm not paying attention anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. I you know, was at a conference in New York Digital Hollywood, and I was on a panel with the somebody, I can't remember her name, but she was with NBC Universal, and I guess Comcast had just came in and acquired them. And, you know, she was talking about, you know, the big challenges around trying to develop really great content and trying to develop, you know, the type of content that is so expensive to create that you need advertisers, you need certain support, or you need some type of subscription revenue model. And we talked and talked and talked about the idea of what I call B-rated content or B-plus rated content or even C-plus or C-minus content. A good example of C-minus content could be a viral YouTube video, you know, that has caught fire. You know, you go on YouTube and sometimes I'm amazed. I'll get wind of a video and I'll load up the site and there's like 20 million people have watched this thing. And I'm like, this isn't good content. This isn't Star Wars. You know, this is a 3-minute, you know, homemade video.
Sure.
But if they've captured a lot of eyeballs, and you know, you wonder whether or not the younger folks will eventually, you know, they won't care about the super high quality content, or they'll pick their battles and they won't really watch it as much.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk a little bit more about what we need to relay, or the message that we need to send to companies and brands about going back to this pyramid flip that's very fast coming. What do companies need to do, and sort of what questions does this bring up for brands in the near future?
Yeah, no, that's. I'm glad you asked that. I mean, we have a very specific process that we go through with all of our customers, and the first thing we do is the PPC analysis. So we literally want to understand, in the products that you sell, in the industry that you're in the categories or the various personas that are interested in what you have to offer, where are the places that matter most, where are the people that matter most, and where is the content that matters most? What content is resonating the most? What content forms are resonating the most? Are people watching video? Do they like blogs? Do they prefer Twitter? What are they most interested in looking at? And every industry is different, and every company has a different PPC map. It's literally a map of the network. Once you've created that, you then have a wide variety of things you can do. You can develop a great content strategy, and you can truly become a publisher of that information, and you can distribute it across your owned and unowned properties. You can keep monitoring your PPC network so you understand whether issues have occurred, whether you have customer relationship management challenges, whether people are making suggestions relative to your products and services. And then you can run campaigns. You could do an integrated campaign, which, you know, talked about a seasonal beer. Let's say you're a brewing company that's launching this summer, and you could be doing TV, and you could be doing Facebook, and then you could be doing beer blog outreach. So you can integrate all of these types of things. But at the end of the day, the customer is completely in control of everything they do on the web. When you click on your browser, you know where you're going. You know what you're looking for. When you go to Google and search, you know what you're asking the system for. When you go to Facebook or Twitter, or you go to a LinkedIn group, or you go to a community of interest, you ask questions, you get answers back the entire time. You're driving the process. So brands need to recognize that, and this PPC map is the root of that information. That is where all of the goodies are that can help brands identify, you know, a wide variety of tasks and a wide variety of things you can do. So that is the process we go through. Now, there's different nuances depending on whether your product is a considered product, meaning it's something where people are making a decision on, where it may take a couple weeks or a couple months or even 6 months to decide, versus non-considered products, which, you know, have less risk and don't take a lot of time to figure out, like your deodorant, you know, for example.
Right.
So there's lots of nuances, but the PPC map is really the heart of everything. And once brands start creating these maps, and then not only creating them but monitoring them on a daily basis, and developing and adjusting their marketing strategies accordingly, that's when we feel like a brand's in a really, really good place relative to the social web.
I definitely agree. And can you talk a little bit about what the ethical rules of engagement might be once you have brands that are starting to interact with their customer sort of on their own playing field?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's evolving. You know, there are lots of organizations out there that feel that the social web is a violation of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that individuals are, you know, the information that they have is their own, and that if they publish something, you know, maybe a brand shouldn't be able to get their hands on it. Maybe they should, and there's an evolving area there. I think what matters the most is that there's lots of data and lots of information available. There's two ways you can use it. You can use it, you know, directly. You can say, hey, Facebook just told me that John Doe, you know, likes this and that and the other, so I'm going to advertise to them. But what they're doing instead is they're aggregating all of these faceless people into groups and then using them and selling off that data. I think that's fine. It doesn't bother me that I would be, you know, a no-name face in a group and that I might get advertising. Where the line is blurry is if you're talking directly at me, talking directly to me, and you know things about me that I don't want you to know. And that's a big question mark. And the other reason it's a huge question mark is because no matter what laws are presented and no matter what Congress does in the future, the consumers are eventually going to decide what's okay and what's not okay. And the companies that respect that are going to win, and the companies that don't respect that are going to lose. So I think Congress could come in and make a wide variety of laws, and I think there's been some lawsuits from the Justice Department, and some brands have paid a few bucks, you know, which is pocket change, you know, relative to the cash that they have on the balance sheet. You know, if you're going to ask Google for $50 million, you know, they're going to make that up in interest income in, you know, 30 days. They're not really thinking about that. What I think is going to matter most is, what are the consumers willing to give up? How open are they willing to be? And again, you go back, there's a major generational shift there, because some of the consumers are very, very private, like the older baby boomers, but the younger folks seem to put out more and more information. They seem to almost, they don't seem to care as much. They see these embedded devices and the web is very open. So, you know, how you use the information will eventually be in the consumer's hands, I believe. And one of our partners, this is a large CRM company, the CEO was talking to me about a month ago about data lockers, where they see the future being an environment where you have a data locker, it's got your identity in it, it's got information about you in it, and you can share your data locker with a brand if you so choose, but if you decide you do not want to, that locker is, you know, you can't get in there. You can't see anything that's in there. And they think, you know, it's, again, they're always looking 5-7 years out. They see that these data lockers will eventually rule the day. And what's fascinating about a data locker is it's more consumer controlled. It's just more and more moving towards the customer owning everything and controlling the process. And I think that's eventually where it's going to go. But over the next 5 years, we're going to find out what consumers are willing to give up and what they're not willing to give up.
I think that's a great point. One of my, I don't know if it's a struggle necessarily, but oftentimes when I'm talking about Twitter in particular, I speak a lot about using advanced Twitter search. And especially for a local business, figuring out what people are tweeting about when they have a need or a want that your product or service satisfies. And if it's geographically specific, you can use the advanced Twitter search to even put in that area, such that when these people tweet these things, as a brand, you can sort of jump in and be the hero and offer your product or services, or at least initiate some sort of conversation and develop a rapport with that person to perhaps get them to use your business. And I've seen that work in some ways where it's been very, very effective and people are very responsive to it. And they're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you were listening. And I think that's so cool. And thank you for reaching out to me. I truly appreciate it. And then I've seen the flip side where people are like, I feel like you're stalking me online. And this is just, you know, this is very much in my face. And I was just tweeting, even though it's public, I don't feel like I'm talking publicly. I still feel like I'm talking to my friends, and I don't need you butting into my conversation.
Yep.
So I think it's a very delicate balance about, you know, where it is appropriate to interact and where it's not, and if you're going to offend somebody or if you're going to be seen favorable to them.
Yeah, you speak to how do you engage, how do you activate, you know, what in your case is an unowned property because it's somebody else's Twitter account.
Right.
And it's going to vary. It's going to vary based on that person's tolerance. It'll probably vary based on the issue itself.
Yeah.
It could vary based on whether they were exaggerating or not, how truthful they were in their remarks. And, you know, what will be most interesting is as more and more people attempt these things, whether individuals that had been tweeting about, you know, information that they thought was just other followers, maybe they stopped tweeting that. Maybe they shut down a little bit, while people that don't care about it, maybe they become more open. And you just nailed the major challenge of all brands, is that out there in the social web, in the web of PPC, there are individual human beings with individual needs, individual desires, individual tweets, individual problems. And every brand, you know, assuming that it's in their target demographic, wants to be able to have a conversation with every one of those people. And A, it's very, very difficult to do that. It's very, very expensive to do it. And you never know when you're allowed to do it.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely a tricky beast that we have to work with.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Well, with all that we have to think about, and, you know, as we're sort of talking about our predictions for the very near future of social media, do you see marketing budget shifting maybe away from ad budgets and more towards social, and how do you see that evolving?
Yeah, I see phase one is going to be some brands are going to realize that the target audience that they want to reach, which is the millennial. So if I'm Coca-Cola, you know, I already have my Coke customers by the time they're 28 or 30 or 35. You know, with Coke or Pepsi, I need the 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. And with all the DVRing and the hopper from Dish Network and all of the ways that these individuals can skip the commercials, I see some broadcast media shifts moving into digital. And where I see them moving first is the brand as a publisher. In 2008, I actually wrote a white paper called Brands as Publishers. And it was the sort of initial thought process. It wasn't just mine. I mean, a lot of people believe that brands are publishers. But it was kind of my first attempt to understand it and sort of draw a box around it. I see in the future, and some brands already have this, companies like Nike, companies like Dell, companies like Whole Foods, having newsrooms, having actual 30 people, 40 people, 100 people. If you're Whole Foods, maybe you have one person in each store. And rather than running television ads or rather than running some of your traditional media, you're basically broadcasting content through all of these communities of interest. So I see that as phase one, moving from broadcast into publishing. And being a publisher is very difficult. Brands have never been publishers. They hired a Madison Avenue ad agency. They did a television commercial. And they rented the platforms. They rented the TV station. They rented the radio station. They even rented the printing presses for the direct mail pieces. They rented the database merge applications. They rented everything. As a publisher, you actually need to own all those assets. But I see that happening first. And since social, in my opinion, is a behavior, it's really just going to be about brands continuing to keep their eyes on the PPC map and investing the money in the technology, in resources, to always be on top of that map. And I see money moving in there as well.
Very good. And so what other trends do you anticipate seeing just inside marketing departments?
Yeah, one of the actual biggest trends that I see, and I kind of built R2I around this, is I see technology professionals entering the marketing departments more and more. In fact, I would bet you that in 5 to 10 years, the chief marketing officer will have as many IT professionals working under him or her as the chief technology officer does. Because the technology that we use to distribute these messages, to do the analytics, to do the scorecarding, to understand what's working and what isn't working, I mean, this is hard stuff. I mean, there are a lot of zeros and ones, a lot of very difficult, raw computer code you know, sitting behind the largest marketing departments in the world. And a lot of that computer code is going to be big data computer code as these PPC maps become so big and so vast. And you're going to need a lot of technology professionals working on that. Well, those technology professionals should not be working under the person that's trying to keep your email up and running or right. trying to keep your internal database systems up and running. They need to be working in marketing information systems. And I see, you know, more and more IT professionals joining marketing departments in the future. I think that's going to be a major, major trend.
Yeah, I think I completely agree with you. I think especially when you have to sort of build systems that are increasingly more advanced to sort of distinguish yourself from the other noise that's out there in the social world. You know, you can come in with an idea, but if you don't have, you know, I'm a marketer, but I am not a tech person. And, you know, I have people all the time say, oh, well, you know, because you're in computers, you know, you do marketing. You probably know this. I'm like, no. I can do marketing, but I can't do tech. But I feel like, you know, if I had that tech background, just the possibilities would be limitless.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't you see that B.J. Emerson with Tasty Delight is a prime example of that? He's the geek that was behind the door and grabbed the social and became the marketing, PR, social, technology agent, social manager for Tasty Delight. So,
yeah, that's a wonderful example. And
yeah, I see that happening more and more. I see that happening more and more. The technology is now embedded in everyone's lives, especially the younger folks. And once it's embedded, you know, you know how to use it. You know, just like they taught you typing. And you know, when I was in high school, you know, that was a big thing. You had to know how to type. Well, now you need to know how to code HTML.
Right.
And you need to be able to, you know, make adjustments to your own web properties, and you need to be able to do all these things. So, you know, tech is going to rule the day. You know, I'm a big believer in R2I. You know, they call us the geeks that do marketing. And I just believe that, you know, the balance between having great technology brains, great creative brains, great marketing brains, working in the marketing silo is where we're going.
Well, Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick, and I'm going to ask you, I know, can you just share with us maybe one or two really sort of cool projects? I don't know if you can tell us about clients or whatever, but something really neat that you either are working on at R2I or have worked on in the past?
Yeah. I mean, I can't mention any customer names. I hope that's okay with you.
Sure.
But we've done a wide variety of customer acquisition projects that were highly integrated. But I'm going to tell you something that's new that we're working on, and it basically has to do with, it's not crisis management, because crisis management is when something goes terribly wrong in a business.
Right.
You know, how do we deal with it? How do we protect ourselves? This is more about business decisions, whether they be daily business decisions, weekly business decisions, monthly or yearly business decisions that a large brand needs to make that the social web may not agree with. And when you think about it, in the past, if you changed your pricing, if you canceled a product or service, if you made these types of business decisions, maybe you have some upset customers, but you didn't have the full-on social web acting and talking and expressing themselves. And you didn't end up, you know, you may not even end up in the 6 o'clock news, or now the Wall Street Journal is just talking about how many people are talking about you. They're not even really talking
right.
about the business decision that you made. So we actually created a program that uses these PPC maps and looks at a business decision that's coming. So let's say it's coming in 30 days, and how to get out in front of it, how to have your responses lined up, how to have 100 or 200 influencers ready to squash any issues. If there is an issue, where does it escalate? Who talks about it? What do they say? And how do you monitor it? And we literally have done this for a couple large brands, and we create these war rooms with all the plasma TVs, and we spend 24 hours a day, you know, for 2 weeks monitoring everything. And it's basically the next evolution of crisis management, but it's not crisis management, you know, relative to something terrible happening, like, you know, like the Tylenol scares where somebody poisoned a thing of Tylenol, or a plane crash. These are normal, everyday or every month business decisions that are now in this transparent world so out there and so ready to be misconstrued because it's a soundbite world. Well, how do you deal with that in the future? So it's really customer relationship management centric, and that's some of the newer stuff we're doing right now.
That's very good. Well, that sounds like you're perfectly aligned with your vision, which I suppose makes sense for your company.
I'm certainly trying. It's not easy. I'm certainly trying, for sure.
Well, Matt, we greatly appreciated having you on the show tonight. You have so much wonderful information. Would you please share with us how we can find you and R2 Integrated online?
Yeah, so my Twitter handle is at R2IMatt. Our corporate Twitter is at R2 Integrated. The website is r2integrated.com, and it's just to spell it out, it's R, the letter R, the number 2, and the word integrated.com. And, you know, Facebook is, you know, facebook.com/r2integrated. So there's lots of ways to find us. We've got lots of great content on our website, and hope to hear from some people.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, man. Again, very good information, and Deb and I, I'm sure, will be blogging about it. I am promising the world right now that I am going to blog about it. So look forward to that blog, and thank you again. We're going to move into our Geek It Out segment, so you are welcome to stay on the line with us and hang out, or you are free to go. I'm sure you're very busy and have lots of things to do, but whatever you'd like to do.
All right, yeah, I may jump and walk the dog if that's okay.
That's perfect. It's a great excuse.
She's staring at me right now. So hey, thanks for having me, guys. I had a great time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Right, have a good night.
You.
Cheers.
Bye.
There it goes. Okay, yes. I was ready. I'm ready. So what's fun things? Because you've teased me all day, and I don't know where we're going.
Okay, well, in carrying with our new theme that I think sort of became unwritten, but I'm loving it since we did Charity Miles and some other apps, our app of the week. Our app of the week is called Endorse, and you can get it at endorse.com. And it's available for the iPhone and, of course, the Android.
Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm. When you download endorse.com, you get a list of items that you can purchase at whatever, Target, Walmart, the grocery store, what have you. And it's not a long list, but some of it, it's like it's any brand of toilet paper or any brand of chips, et cetera. And some are more specific products, and the list changes. And the premise is after you go and you do your shopping, you scan your receipt or you take a picture of your receipt with the app. And you get cash back, actually, for any of the products that you have purchased that are the deals that are going on right now. So some might say 10%, some might say 20%. If you're willing to share with your social network that you are using the app, you can unlock a 50% on some of the items. And once you have accrued $25 in cash back, they actually mail you a check. The other cool part about it is that even if you don't purchase something that's on the list, they're still encouraging you to scan your receipt. One, it's helping them show more items that are more tailored to what you actually buy so that you can save money on the things that you buy. But another thing that they're doing is even if you haven't purchased anything that's one of the deals going on at the moment, it's going to give you points. And once you've reached, I believe it's either 300 or 500 points, they actually send you a voucher. I guess it's, I don't know if it's digitally or via mail, that you can then sort of turn over to a charity as a monetary contribution.
Oh, I love that. You know I like that one.
So we can save money and we can contribute to charity. So I think I just downloaded it yesterday and we went to the grocery store tonight and I am so excited to go scan my receipt and see if I bought anything that applies and start racking up my points. So I've added it to the home screen of my phone.
Oh, I'll have to download that one. I like it.
So that's endorsed. All right, so on to another cool one. And this is called your conversation score. And it's to discover your Facebook page's influence, engagement, and performance. And the URL is C-score, just the letter C, S-C-O-R-E dot recommend dot L-Y. And you can actually do it not just for your own Facebook page, but you can really do it for any Facebook page. So at the end of the URL, recommend.ly/, if you put the username of that Facebook page, you can check it out for anybody, and they'll give you things, whether you're a broadcaster or an engager or some other things, but it gives you a whole bunch of information about your posting habits and the response to fans and your virality and really all sorts of good information that's a little bit different than the Facebook Insights itself.
I have to play around with that one.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find something different than my usual Twitter apps. I can't remember who the person was. I should have noted it to give them credit on the show, but I guess one of the creators or founders or something of this sort of solicited to me in a way that I appreciated it, in that I got a tweet on my Staying at Social account that said, your score is 48 and you are a blah, 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 whatever it was. And it had the link back to it, and that's how I learned about the site. So I thought it was cool because it was something, you know, it was applicable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they let me know about it. So I really appreciated that. So thank you to unknown man.
Whoever
you are, I really appreciate it.
Them a koozie. We don't know who it is.
Yeah, I love the app, and I'm talking about it, and I will tweet about it later, so maybe we can find you again. So that's that. The next one is one that I use quite often, and actually I have it on my Twitter right now, but it's called Twibbon, T-W-I-B-B-O-N. And this is a way that people can show their support for a cause or a campaign. What you do is the creator of the campaign goes in and they upload a little image, and ultimately other people will hook up their Twitter or their Facebook to the Twibbon site, and it will put that image overlaying on their profile picture so that you can show your support that way. So you might see it with like the ribbons for all of the different types of cancer and such. The one I have on mine now is Professionals for Paul's. Last year, and I'll have it again this year because I'm on the event committee for a 5K for a cancer support center near me. We created a Twibbon for that so that people who are coming to be part of the race could have it on theirs. So it's a really great way to build awareness. Actually, we had it for... remember when I had the little domino for the domino project for sex
Museum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really cool because it worked. I had a lot of people say to me, hey, what's that domino about? And I was like, oh, and, you know, it got me talking about the initiative. So it's really cool. So
we'll have to hold on to this for when we do our walk or awareness.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely create something.
We'll have to. Well, you can create something for us.
I kind of feel like it was gonna happen.
You knew I was flipping that one. Not we, you. So sorry.
Fair enough. Okay. The next one I have is one that I am super excited about because I don't think I've told everybody yet. I know you know, but I'm working on a startup and I'm not telling any other information other than that. And actually, I may be working on two startups. It's the second one I told you about the other day. So it was crazy to work on two startups at the same time. But anywho, I was working for, I wanted to get up a landing page that would grab people's email and start sort of the social conversation and building buzz about it before I get the website up. And I knew I could go on to WordPress, and there was a whole bunch of different WordPress templates and plugins for doing sort of a coming soon page, and I don't know. I don't like to put in a lot of work on those sorts of things myself. I really like to be, you know, sort of the sites do it for you. And I was reading the Killer Startups blog, which if you're working on a startup, I highly recommend the Killer Startups blog. And I learned about something called Launch Rock. It's launchrock.com. And this basically helps you put up sort of a launching soon or a coming soon page. And it might not even be because you're working on a startup or anything like that. It could just be that you have an event coming. It's free to set up a page. And it's really cool. There's a ton of cool features. You can have a video up there. I'm actually thinking about doing a video of myself explaining what it's about so that when it pops up on the screen, it's just me saying, hi, this is why I started this. This is the premise of it. I feel like that would be a little bit more powerful than just the words on there. But there's a lot of social sharing tools that you can put up there. Rafflecopter actually has one. When I tweeted about this yesterday, Greg at Rafflecopter said, I could have told you about this, but I assumed you already knew. And I'm like, no, for shame. How dare you not tell me? They have one set up at brand.rafflecopter.com, I believe it is. And I said, Greg, not only did you not tell me about Launch Rock, you didn't tell me about this brand.rafflecopter.com that's coming soon.
Shame on him.
Yeah, so it's apparently a blog outreach for bloggers that Raffle, a project that Rafflecopter is working on. So if you're a blogger or a brand, go to brands.rafflecopter.com and look at their beautiful launch page and put in your email address and get further information. So two geek it outs right there. But it's really cool. So I'm excited to start setting
that
up.
Oh, I like that.
All right. The next one is called Appolicious.com. Appolicious, putting it in the chat room. Maybe I should say that again. Appolicious. And this is an app directory for the iPhone and the iPad and Android.
We're going to get some booing here in a minute in the chat.
I know. Sorry, there's no BlackBerry apps on here. But it's really cool because I'm always looking for new apps, at least to try out. So I like to see the ones that are in the news and that are recommended. Mm-hmm. And, of course, now this will help me with our app of the week because I have a whole list of things that I can dig into here. But it's neat to be able to look them up by category and things like that.
Huh. I have never saw this. I like this.
You know, I actually read about this, again, on the Killer Startups blog. They were suggesting for startups, but if you were working on an app, this is a really great place to go. I guess you can submit your app, and then you can get reviews for your app. So that was the suggestion there. So I think the reviews part is really important. Often when I look at apps that I'm downloading, I don't download an app unless it has really good positive reviews, so I think that's really cool, too.
You're a lot better than I am because I tend to just download and then end up getting rid of it because, like, okay, this is really not what I expected it to be.
Well,
very good sites you have.
And that's all I got.
That's good, and she's yelling at us that it is time to say goodnight. So, great tonight, great show, and then next week we'll have Jean from Charity Miles, and we'll talk a little bit more about our upcoming October event.
That sounds awesome, very excited.
Yeah. I am super excited. So good night, everybody. Don't forget to visit our Facebook page and retweet some of our tweets, and we'll go on story, and we'll everybody have a good week.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks. Bye, Kay. Bye-bye. Bye, everybody else.
Yeah.
Socially, socially, socially.